Hey, how's it going, everybody? You're listening to the Reptiles With podcast. Today, we're going to be talking to Luke from Lizard Morphs about blue-tongued skinks. He's all the way in Australia, but before we get started, hit like, hit subscribe so you can see more reptile content from us on your recommended feed. And of course, if you're watching and want to listen, we're on pretty much every single streaming platform that matters. Let's get started. All right, welcome to the Reptiles With podcast. How's it going?
Good, thanks. Yourself?
Good, good. So you're in your reptile room yourself?
I am, yeah. So I this is actually my work desk.
Okay.
So I work from home and I work here. I'm sort of just stuck in a little corner.
Yeah,
In my room. Yeah.
I'm literally just about the same thing right here in the corner. So
I can see.
Yeah, for sure. So let me just because I ended up listening to a couple of the podcasts. I listened to the MJ one. I listened to the Snakes and the Fat Man one.
Yeah.
So to get this straight, you do have a full-time job. You for the most part, a pretty large, decent breeder. You know, you're producing a decent amount of animals. And you have a badass Instagram account.
Yeah. Sure. So I guess with the lizards, it's me and my wife a 50-50.
Yeah.
So we've got a mixture of blue tongue skink mutations and bearded dragon mutations. And my wife looks after the dragons and I look after the blue tongues, essentially. So we sort of split it half and half. Then we've got a few other little projects, like we've got some pygmy mulga monitors, Gil and I, and we've got some geckos and some frogs and some stick insects, other little bits and pieces. But the majority of our stuff is the two main things, which is the dragons and the blue tongues and the mutations. And then I look after Instagram. So
cool.
Yeah. So I love Instagram. I get some positive and some negative shit on there, you know, like that's what those platforms are like, I guess.
Yeah, but, for sure.
But I don't like getting into drama. So if I've got people on there, like, you know, abusing me and carrying on, I just sort of block them and move on, you know?
Yeah. It is the best thing to do that. So before I did this, Reptiles, I did music and I was a touring musician, and the band that I was in used to get so much heat. It was always, you know, always more negative than positive. And so, you know, at this point in my life, I'm so used to like negative comments and I'm just like, oh, whatever. So you guys don't do any snakes or anything like that?
No, just lizards. Lizards only. Yes. Yeah, so okay, cool. We've got some frogs and some stick insects, but lizards essentially is what we do. We've never really been into snakes. I started with blue tongues and all the different mutations of blue tongues. And that's my focus. You know, I love blue tongues. And I've got heaps of them. Well, that's how we connected, you know. I saw your blue tongue photo and that.
Yes.
And my wife's really into dragons. So we just, all our dragons are tapping on the glass at the moment because we just warmed them up.
Nice.
So we've just brumated everything. We brumate absolutely everything.
Is that a US Arc sticker that I see back there?
That is I'm a bronze US Arc member. Yeah.
No absolutely. Way. All the way over there.
Yeah. Well, I think that, look, if there's a fire on your neighbor's property, do you go over there and help them put the fire out, or do you wait at your house until the fire gets to your property? Do you know what I mean?
Understood.
And so I just think, yeah, fuck that. I'll do whatever I can to support, even though, and 40% of my following on Instagram is in the US. So I just think it makes sense. Yeah,
for sure. Yeah, I'm also a member of US Arc myself. I do, you know, I definitely support them. You know, you've listened to a couple of the podcasts that I've done. My two co-hosts, Chuck and Tino. They support what US Arc is trying to do, but they do have a little bit of backstepping with some of the recent what's the word that I'm looking for? Just like a little bit of fear mongering and stuff like that. But all in all, yeah, I definitely think it's important to support US Arc because They're pretty much the only one doing that in the States, you know, to protect the reptile keepers.
Yeah, it's very different here. You know, we can only have Australian animals.
Yeah.
No import, no export. So, you know, any Australian animals go overseas, they either got there because they went via a zoo and then were bred and then sold privately.
Yep.
They went over there in a Pringles can. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like there's no legal import or export. And so, you know, we only can have Australian species and we've got pretty strict rules and stuff. You know, in America, you can have so many different things and that, but
correct.
The more rules they bring in America and the more tighter they get, you know, other countries like Canada and Australia and that are similar types of westernized countries, they look at those rules and go, oh, that's a good idea.
Yep.
We'll copy that, you know, and then it makes it hard for us. So I guess I don't have as big a fear as you guys do over there because all of our stuff's native anyway. Like, you know, if I've got a lace monitor, it gets out. Well, there's lace monitors in my area. It's not going to become some sort of an ecological disaster.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And I know that's what the government is, or that the government's fear mongering is that that's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, if your Burmese python gets loose in Wisconsin, it's not going to live.
Yeah. Right?
So calm down.
I'm actually from Miami, Florida. So right. We have, yeah. So I get literally the whole heat of it with the Everglades and stuff like that. And I just moved to Orlando, just 4 hours north. And it's definitely way different because in Miami, literally you're walking a block, you're seeing an agama, you're seeing an iguana, you're seeing curly tail lizards, obviously a shit ton of brown anoles. I've personally never seen a berm in the wild, but yeah, it's invasive central down there. So I you know, yeah. To a certain extent, like I understand the worry that that the government has over the ecosystem.
Yeah, well, we just don't have any imports, you know.
Exactly.
We don't have anything. So
what kind of what kind of permits do you guys need over there to keep animals?
Yeah, so we still each state has their own licensing system. So I've got a license. I record all my animals. I have to record what I breed, eggs, what's born, what's what dies, etc. And once a year we submit that to get checked off. But the license is like $40 a year. It's no big deal.
Yeah, it's similar to here. We do $50 a year. So
it's no big deal. And you just submit the form once a year. Like there's a lodgement period in April. They ask for the form to come back. You submit the form with your ins and outs. And pretty straightforward, really.
Sure. Are you able to like catch any of the wildlife and breed it, or it has to be all captive bred?
Yeah, 100%. Cool. No, yeah, can't take anything out of the wild. Absolutely not.
Yeah. Yeah. So I got married a couple years ago, and it was right before during the heat of the pandemic, but leading up to the wedding, we were talking about the honeymoon and we really wanted to go to Australia for the honeymoon. And I was telling my wife, I'm like, bro, you know, for me, Australia is not a place that you can just go 2 weeks. Like I have to be there for multiple weeks so I can experience it. And I told her, I was like, dude, if I saw a blue tongue in the wild, I would lose my shit. Like that would be one of the best things ever.
So I live in Southeast Australia.
Okay.
So my area, the reptiles that I see, they're snakes. So copperheads, brown snakes, etc. The main thing I see in my area is blue tongues, eastern Hell blue yeah. tongues,
nice.
Shinglebacks. So you guys got some shinglebacks, and lace monitors.
Oh, that's so cool.
But I mostly see eastern blue tongues. You see them on the road. They're either crossing the road or they're on the edge of the road to bask because it's warm. In the peak season when it's warm and they're out moving and all that, I probably move a blue tongue off the road once a week.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. But you do see a lot of squashed ones, unfortunately. But
I would imagine.
Me and my daughter are always on blue tongue watch when we're driving, and like we'll stop for any blue tongue. I keep a towel in the back of my pickup so I can just like grab it with the towel and put it in the bush and get off the road.
For sure. That's so cool, man. It's so crazy. Over there, would you say that the Northerns or the Easterns are more expensive in price-wise with the hobby?
The same.
Just about the same?
Yeah, because the mutations, so the Albino and the Hypermelanistic started in Eastern, right? And then in Northerns, White Northern and Annery started in Northern. And they were sort of the four pillars at the first four recessive mutations, essentially. But now they've been mixed up a lot. So we've got a lot of mixed North and Eastern blood in the private collections because the Eastern albinos were pretty weak. So we added Northern blood to beef them up, that sort of thing.
Yeah. So I had an albino Eastern for a short period of time. It was loaned to me. And when me and a couple of the breeders that I work with, we were talking to some of the people in Australia and we're like, you know, trying to get some advice of how to get this guy to go. And they were telling us, they're like, yeah, we introduced the Northerns because the Eastern albinos, they weren't as vigorous. So with the Northern blood, they, you know, were more,
makes them a bigger animal, tougher animal. I've got pure Eastern albino. I've got pure Eastern hyper.
Yep,
but I've got mixed blood albino and mixed blood hyper, and I'm trying to keep some pure Eastern stuff and some mixed. You know, I don't mix them. But then you know, like for example, I'm trying to make a double visual called a platinum.
Yep,
which is hypermelanistic and white northern.
Yep.
Now that's going to be mixed blood. You can't get white northern and hypermel in together without it being some sort of mixed.
Correct.
So I've got some double het for larva, which is the albino and the hyper mixed together. That's pure Eastern. I don't know how that'll go. I've also got some double het larva stuff that is mixed that I think will probably go better because it's got a bit of northern in it. But so I'm going to have a go at both. So this season I'm trying to do lots of double visual. The last few seasons, all I've been doing is trying to make an army of double hets.
Yep.
So I've made double het for Sunglow, which is albino and white. I've made double het for Platinum, which is white hyper. I've made double het for double het for Larva, which is albino and hyper. So I've been trying to work on all the double hets. So the last few seasons I've been breeding those and I've built them up now so they're all of size. So this next season coming, I'm going to try and start pairing double hets and cross my fingers I can do well, you know. But it's harder than breeding bearded dragons, you know.
I actually think whenever people, because I work at a reptile shop, and whenever people come in and they want a lizard, I always tell them like, oh, get a blue tongue. And they're like, oh, but it like moves so fast. It's like, I need something calm, like a bearded dragon. I'm like, bro, this is the superior pet lizard. Super simple to keep. You know, you could feed them dog food if you want to. It's very minimal and they make amazing pets.
Yeah, they're super easy to keep. They're much easier to keep than a bearded dragon. The temperatures are lower.
Yep.
The Australian ones don't necessarily need any humidity. I don't give mine any humidity at all. They can eat dog food. They'll eat dry food. They'll eat fruit and veggies you chop up.
Yep.
It's really straightforward. They're super simple. They can get a bit aggressive around breeding time. The males can get a bit grumpy.
For sure.
But most of the time they're pretty chill. They're good for kids. My daughter's got a hypermel female and a double het larva female that she's going to breed with some of my males this year. But yeah, they're super chill, you know. Dragons, you've got to keep them hotter. You've got to feed them live insects. I think it's much more challenging to do dragons.
Yeah, I'm not that big of a fan for the dragons. I'm a blue tongue guy. That's what I say. The blue tongue guy, you know, for sure.
Yeah.
So when we linked up, it was because of the ivory, quote unquote.
Yeah. So I saw that post that you put up. I saw a lot of people put up photos of that ivory. Blue tongue that they're calling an ivory over there, and I just wondered what the genetics were of it. It looks, I've got, so with the white northerns, in Australia. There's a few different lines that different breeders have done. They're not all the same. And your Ivory looks to me like a what I would call a dirty white Northern. Uh-huh. So it's got a little bit of yellow on the back that will fade out as it gets older. Yeah. But even when it's older, it'll still have a few little speckles. And that's like a what I would consider more like a dirty white. And then there's a real pure white, which another breeder, he calls them a super hypo. Again, that's his own name. But they're the same. They're the same genetics. They work. You can breed them together. You'll still make whites. But they're clean white. There's no marks, no dirtiness, no nothing. They're just like stark white.
Yeah.
The tongue being that little bit pinky purpley color, that's normal with the whites, all of them. I don't think that's different. So to me, it looks like that dirty white. If there's something else in it or it works a little bit differently, that'd be interesting.
Yeah.
But from those initial photos, to me, it looks like that. But who knows, you know?
Yeah, honestly, essentially, I think it's that. I do think it's that. The reason why I think they labeled it Ivory, I'm sure that just to minimize the friction between what can or can't be here, you know, with the person that, you know, has them.
Sure.
Yeah, for sure. And what I see with them, they kind of remind me of an ivory ball python, if I'm being honest with
you. Yeah, and look, and I think naming something that suits your geographical area and your customer base makes sense. So I just wondered if it was the same genetics or not. The name didn't really worry me. I just thought, oh, is it different or is it not different?
I'm sure, honestly, I'm sure it's the same. For all intents and purposes, I mean, the animals get, I'll send you on Instagram the link that they sent out when they were like, oh, these are releasing this year. And it's a white.
I think I've read it. And look, I wasn't throwing any shade on it because it looks like a real nice animal. I really like it. Because some white Northern babies or young white Northerns look pretty shit.
Yeah.
And that, the one you had a photo of looks great. I've got a male hold back that I got when it was a baby that looked exactly like that, and he's grown up to be a great breeder. He's got that little bit of dirty color still on him. I use him quite a bit on Instagram. You'd probably find him if you went and looked. He's cool. Like, he's really cool. I think it'll be a great animal when it grows up.
And the way that I don't mind a little bit of pattern with it, and I'm sure it is going to lose the pattern as it ages.
It'll lose the yellower stuff.
Yeah.
But you know how it's got those few sort of grayer looking dots? They'll stay.
Okay. So that kind of stuff I really do like. Cause if thinking to myself, if it's similar to an ivory ball python, right? And with ivory ball pythons, they're primarily white. But when they start introducing like the leopard gene, or they'll put like leopard and enchi, you're able to see a little bit more of the pattern through that white. So that's kind of how I'm thinking going forward, mixing it in with my, I don't have any Easterns here, but I have like dark line Northerns. I have red line Northerns. So that's kind of like what I'm thinking about doing with stuff like that. See if any of the pattern can stay with the white.
Yeah, I find the whites, if you breed them with lighter colored Northerns, the heads will look real sort of caramelly.
Okay.
You'll make great looking heads. Really great looking hets.
Okay.
I've got a male het, or I did have a male het. I sold him actually because the visual male was such a good breeder. I sold his brother who was a het. And he was the best looking het because he sort of was like a really washed out caramelly, very light colored, super, super light colored. You'll make some great looking hets. The white hets are cool. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it, man. You know, slowly but surely. How do you guys have a method to sexing any of the babies? Like a safe method?
No. you'll see on my Instagram a few weeks ago, I had one of my blue tongues put through a CT machine.
Uh-huh.
And so we put it through a CT scanner and we were able to look at the hemipenes. In this instance, it was a female.
Yeah.
But no. So you can pop them, but I wouldn't pop them until they were at least 6 months old. They've got to be good size.
Yeah, yeah.
People do say if you visually look at them from the top, the body to the tail length, yeah. if they've got a short tail, it's a female, you know.
Yeah.
I haven't had success visually doing it. I've never been right. So I think you've got to either do the dye contrast x-ray. So you put a little bit of dye in the cloaca, you x-ray and it shows up.
Yeah.
Or you put them through a CT machine. But you've got to wait till they're sexually mature as well. Like,
sure.
The best reptile vet here in Australia, he wanted to see how long it would take until you could visually sex them. So he did some x-rays on mine at like 1 month, 2 month, 3 month, 4 month, 5 month. And I was power feeding them. So they were big. They were like full-size animals.
Yeah.
And they were all x-raying the same, even when they were full-size, until they were of an age where they became sexually mature and then yeah. the hemipene showed.
Yeah.
So you can't do it too young. You just... Yeah. You've got to hold back everything.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, that's the plan pretty much.
you've got to hold back everything, unfortunately.
What do you guys over there consider to be like a breeding, like what age is mature for you guys?
I've never had success breeding anything in its second season. So if it was born this season, mm-hmm. and then it was up to full size for next season, so season one, I guess.
Yeah.
I've tried to breed them at that age because they're big enough, but I've never actually had them have babies.
Got you.
Never had it work. But the next season, so once they're 2 years old, you're good to go.
Got you. Yeah, I do very similarly, and I think this year I'm even going to, when I go into my brumation stuff, I'm going to brumate even the juveniles, like the stuff that I'm raising, because there's like a theory that a couple people here have been talking about if you brumate them, you know, yeah, they're gonna, if you brumate them earlier in their life, yeah, they yep. will grow a little slower, but when they do breed, they'll probably breed better. And if they are females, they may not slug out, because I, you know, what we notice is the females first year, they usually slug out.
Yeah. So yeah. I don't brumate any in the first year because I'm trying to grow them.
Got you.
But that's just the way I do it. But everything that, so once it's 12 months old, I don't do a brumation the first year. And then the second year before that, season two, I'll brumate them. I've brumated all my double heads I made two seasons ago this year, because I want to start breeding them very shortly.
Are you letting the Northerns and the Easterns get to the same temperature for brumation?
It's inside my house. So yeah. I can't do much other than just turn the power off. Yep.
Okay. And how cold does it get there?
Inside the house at nighttime, it probably gets down to maybe 16 degrees C.
Okay.
I don't know what that is for you. Do you know?
I have no idea.
I'll tell you.
I just agreed with it. I was like, yeah, I know what that is.
16 C to F. 60?
Oh, okay. Cool.
Doesn't get much colder than that because it's inside my house.
Yeah.
And my wife is allergic to the cold.
Yeah, I'm the same way. But even for me, 60 degrees is freezing. I'm from South Florida, man. Anything below 70 is crazy for me.
We would only turn it down to that at nighttime when we're in bed.
Gotcha.
And my blue tongues, their heat goes off from about 10 p.m. till 6 a.m.
Okay.
So about 8 hours.
Okay.
I hope you can't hear my dragons. They're all... like clawing at the glass.
Yeah, I hear it a little, but it doesn't bother me.
So we warmed up the dragons about 10 days ago. And in the last 24 hours, they've all gone crazy. Yeah.
That's good. That's a good sign.
It is good. They're ready to go.
Yeah.
We're gonna try and string them out till this weekend, another few days. Yeah, so we're streaming out. I'm actually holding the blue tongues back a bit this year. So there's a lot of people in Australia already breeding their blue tongues. But I've made a decision this year that they're warmed up already. I've warmed them up a little bit, but I'm holding everything back. I'm not breeding anything until the 1st of August.
Okay.
Last year I warmed them up and then I bred them. Like as soon as they were pacing the tarb or they looked like it, or in fact, as soon as I saw people on Facebook breeding them,
yeah.
I was like, shit, I've got to breed them. I got sort of sucked in.
Yeah.
I sucked in and I I've never had so many slug outs. And I think the males weren't quite ready. I think you've got to wait for the males to warm up. I think you've got to wait for the males to all shed. If the males haven't shed, they're useless.
Yeah. Yeah, I've noticed very similarly. This year, I had a completely shit year. It's the year that I moved up here to Orlando. It was right...
The moving won't help.
Yeah, exactly. It was right during brumation. It was right before brumation. So I moved them into their brumation tubs, but I think it threw them all off. And I'll usually produce, you know, anywhere between 50 to 100 blue tongues. This year, I produced 10. Yeah, so this year sucked.
So this season I'll probably breed more blueies than I've ever bred before. I could breed as many as, I don't know, 20 females maybe.
Nice.
I am holding back a little bit. I'm not breeding. I'm recording when the males shed. So I've had one male shed.
Yeah.
So he'd be the first person to get a crack at stuff once it's August, and I'm just waiting for the other males to shed. The white northern male I was talking about before, he feels like he's going to shed. You know, when you pick him up, you can tell when they're... So he's getting close to shedding. I can feel him. So, yeah, but I'm not breeding anything until they've shed.
That's exciting stuff, man. Yeah, I'm looking this year to try to get some Easterns because, I mean, Easterns here are hard to come by. They're very expensive. And the mutations are out of reach for the most part. They're $10,000, $20,000 for a pair. It's ridiculous. You know, but hopefully this year I'll journey into the Easterns. There's a couple people in my area that have success keeping them all year outside and they're reproducing outside. So I'm going to try that out and see how it goes.
They'd be fine there outside by the sounds of it. Knowing the weather, you know, they'd be fine. I mean, I live in southeast of Australia. Like this morning in Australia, it was 1°C, you know. So that is cold. That is like 33.
I would never. Can't do that.
And they live in the wild. They live in the wild here, like flat out. So they'd still be sleeping here outside. But obviously, all mine live inside, so they work on the schedule I give them. But
yeah.
They'll be fine outside up there, 100%.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna work with a couple Australian species outside. I have some Brettles pythons. I want to get some Mertens water monitors, and that's kind of, you know. So, and I have some Ackies that are still in Miami that I'm probably gonna move up here. Yeah.
Oh yeah, so Ackies are cool.
Yeah.
I don't do Ackies. I do Gill and I. Yeah. Gillens monitors, picking mulga. I've got three of those. I'm only really just starting to get into monitors. I've always really had a focus on blue tongues and my wife, the dragons. And I'm interested in maybe adding a big monitor.
Yeah.
Sort of like a mascot for the page and just
for sure.
Like a dog, you know, have it like walk around the house.
You can't go wrong with a lace monitor, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at maybe getting one of those. So that's sort of the thing I'm looking for. So we'll see how we go.
When I did the podcast the other day with Ron St. Pierre that week, they also brought in a lace monitor to the shop, and it's the first time that I had seen them in person. It was it was insane. So
they're exciting. Awesome. Yeah, laces are cool. So I sent some video. Actually, I've got some video on my phone of a wild one. We were at camping and there was one came through our campsite. So where I live in Victoria is southeast, so it's the coldest part of Australia. So they're pretty much black here.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to soak up the sun, I guess. Correct. You know? So they're really dark colored here. So the Gippsland area, where I'm from. I like the bells. You know, I'd get a bells. That's what I'd be interested in having.
Sure. It's like, you know, it for the most part, it's the most impressive looking one. You know, for the common folk, you know,
And I've always been into mutations. So, I mean, the Gillens monitors are the first thing I've ever had that aren't a mutation. You know, I don't have anything that's wild type except for the Gillens monitors.
Mm-hmm.
I have nothing that's wild.
Yeah.
So I guess if I was going to get a big lace monitor, if you get a Bell's phase, well, it's sort of a mutation, you know. So it's down that track. So that sort of makes sense to me. So that's probably what I'll go for. I think. Yeah, for sure.
So I just got the notification from Zoom. We got about 10 minutes left. I did want to talk to you about your Instagram. It's growing like crazy. You've been posting almost every day, you know, a new update of how many followers you're getting. It's insane, man. Congrats.
Yeah. So I thank you. Yeah. I had a real, that it's a little controversial, particularly with being a dragon keepers in America.
Yeah.
Of my wife helping a bearded dragon to shed, like helping the shed come off.
Got you.
And so, look, that's got some mixed feedback, to be fair. But, you know, we love our animals. We take a lot of care with them. You know, my wife, like, living in this house is like living in a 5-star lizard resort, right? You know, and helping them with their shed is, you know, just part of the routine that we do. Some people saying, oh, you know, look, why would you do that? I can explain it, but, you know, when I get comments like, you're an animal abuser, you should kill yourself, you're a piece of shit. I can't tell them why I would do it. I can't sort of try and, like, I don't need to educate them. I could just tell them why I do it and why they have their opinion. I could have a discussion with them, but they're not open to a discussion. They're basically saying, you know, I'm a bad person.
It's really a bit fucking...
like what people do to Brian Barczyk, you know what I mean? You know? And so I was like, nah, I'm not dealing with that. So I just blocked those people. But we would never do anything to hurt the animals. Like,
of course, you're just helping them shed. That's, you know, they'd rub up on a rock to get the shed off if they needed to, you know?
That's right. And where I live in Australia, I can't 100% replicate the wild conditions in Central Australia. Mm-hmm. So I can't get the humidity exactly the same. I can't give them all of the rocks and things exactly the same. I can't do so we help them shed. It's just what we do. You know, we don't pull off shed that's too early. We bath them, you know, we're safe. You know, we've never hurt one of our lizards. I have a very good relationship with the vets here in Melbourne that are like, really, the doctor we go to here is the you know, renowned as the number one reptile vet in Australia.
Yeah.
You know, he got me to go in there and get my blue tongue CT scan so I could put it on the page, you know. He's not saying, oh, you shouldn't do that, you know. I think it's a lot of shit, but so that's a bit hard.
People suck. Yeah.
It's had 70 million views.
That's awesome. Jesus.
So it's really bumped up my my Instagram following. Yeah. Which is fine. And look, the person that owns one bearded dragon that lives in the middle of America that hates me, well, so be it, you know.
Yeah.
I try and have a very positive page. Everything's fun on my page. You know, it's feeding lizards. It's bathing lizards. It's lizards shedding. It's, you know, my kids playing with the lizards. It's not a serious page. You know, it's mostly lizards doing cool shit to rap music.
Yeah, you know? That's what I was going to say. It's when I was going through your reels and I was like, dude, it's like the lizards are the celebrity and you're the paparazzi. It's great, dude. It's fucking awesome.
Yeah. So it's a bit, you know, like that's the music that I'm into.
Yeah.
I like doing the editing and the, you know, I take clips of music and I edit the videos to suit and I put effects in and I use text and Like I put shitloads of work into those reels. Some of those reels that go for 15 seconds are an hour's work, you know?
Yeah. I usually try whenever I'm shooting a reel or something like that, I'm like, oh, I got to chop this down to 15 seconds. Do you see that your reels ever steal views? Like, do you try to post every day? Or are you allowing yourself to post like, you know, every other day or what's kind of your strategy?
At the moment, I do one reel a day.
Okay.
That's just because I like doing one a day. I occasionally skip a day, but it's very rare. I normally do a reel a day.
Okay.
I never post a reel until the reel before it has at least gone past 10,000 views.
Got you.
I don't want to get in the way of something that might be still ticking over. And I try not to make the reels too long. The longer reels are no good. I learned that off Mason Barnes.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
You know, because he does more educational reels, and his reels go for longer, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But he looked at my content, and we did a bit of discussion. He's like, your content, if you're going to do less educational, more about fun, like clip them back,
yeah.
You know? And he's given me a lot of good advice because he's good on TikTok. He does really well on TikTok.
Yeah. Yeah. If I follow him on TikTok, he's killing it.
Yeah. So, he's given me a lot of advice. I've done a bit of work with a photography lady, who's given me a lot of advice. She's got a couple hundred thousand followers on Insta. She does like real tutorials and stuff. So she does a bit of work with me. But yeah, I'm really into that. I find it really fun. So look, I love Instagram. I love doing the reels and making the videos.
I like the stuff that you're doing, man, and I'm looking forward to it. I do have a little bit of an issue myself because for the majority of the time that we've been on Instagram, we did a lot of ball python stuff, but there's so many ball python breeders here, you know? Yep. So just now are we starting to break out of just being the ball python people with the blue tongue? Since I work at a reptile shop, you know, we're posting different kinds of reptiles. I'm posting whenever I'm shipping something, this is a redfoot tortoise, this is a leopard gecko, you know? So I really like the stuff that you're doing. I'm really excited for it. Before we get off, you just want to tag yourself and, you know, where can people find you?
Yeah, so look, I'm on Facebook and Instagram, but I don't really use Facebook much. So Instagram is my main platform. So it's just Lizard Morphs. At Lizard Morphs. You can find everything on there. I've started working with a few brands on there. I know you guys have a reptile shop. You should sell some. I'm working with Zilla Footwear now, doing like, have you seen those lizard shoes?
Yes. I actually designed a couple different shoes that I'm going to be throwing up on my website very soon.
So I'm doing a bit of that. I'm working with a few food brands as well. Awesome. So using that food with the reptiles on the page. So
love
trying
it.
To do a bit of education and a bit of promotion on there as well. I reply to messages. If people inbox me, ask me questions, as long as they follow the page, I'll help them as much as they want, you know.
Hell yeah.
If they don't follow me, I'm not helping them
for sure. Well, I support it. I'll shoot you a message after this. Thank you so much. We got to get you over here in the States, in Orlando at some point, so you could be on the podcast with Tino and Chuck and we could just laugh for an hour. And
yeah, so I want to go to a show, so I'm trying to. I either want to go to a Tinley,
okay,
or maybe a Pomona,
okay,
super sure. And then when I do that, obviously, then I'll try and get around a few places, you know,
for sure.
Stay there for a week or so and try and do a few things, you know. Yeah,
for sure. Well, when you do that, let me know. And I think we were even talking about going to Tinley this year, so you know, we'll link up and we'll figure it out. But it was great 100%. Having you on the podcast, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. All right, buddy. We'll talk.
Awesome. Cheers.
So. What did you guys think of that? I can honestly say that that's probably one of the best times that I've had talking about blue tongues with somebody. Super big shout out to Luke from Lizard Morphs. I was honestly very happy that we got to compare the ivory and the white northerns. And of course, you can follow us on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook as Modern Reptile Shop. And well, this was the Reptiles With Podcast by Modern Reptile. Later!